Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. Hi, I'm Nadine Lee, one of the partners of the Colony Group. We're an independent fee-only wealth management firm with about $10 billion under management. Our firm provides objective, tax-sensitive advice to executives and entrepreneurs for over three decades. Earlier this year, Macmillan published our book, Financial Planning for Executives and Entrepreneurs, which is available on Amazon, from which I've drawn much of today's discussion. The value of unexercised employee stock options and other equity-based compensation arrangements held by U.S. taxpayers is unfathomable, likely in the trillions of dollars. Stocks are trading near their all-time highs, and many executives and entrepreneurs don't have a clear understanding of what they own and a comprehensive plan to build wealth while managing risk. The CPA tax advisor has a critical role in helping clients navigate the opportunity while mitigating both taxes and managing risk. Last spring, the AICPA hosted my webcast, The ABCs of Equity-Based Compensation. Today's podcast is a deeper dive into the strategies for optimizing incentive stock options. I encourage you to listen to my earlier podcast for background on the various kinds of stock-based arrangements that your clients may be participating in. Without a well-thought-out plan on how to manage company stock concentration, clients generally take action in one of three ways: too late, governed by fear or greed, or without proper tax planning. Options, by their nature, serve as a highly leveraged and efficient vehicle to build ownership in the company. There are two types: incentive stock options, also known as ISOs, and non-qualified options, also known as NQs. ISOs must meet stringent rules. If you do, then there are great tax benefits. But options that don't meet these rules, which are the majority of them, are NQs. NQs, by the way, generally create ordinary income taxed as compensation when they are exercised. We'll go through the rules of the ISOs and why there are tax benefits of being awarded and exercising and meeting the holding periods to get incentive stock option treatment. So again, if you don't meet the ISO treatment or they don't qualify as ISOs from the start, they are non-qualified, resulting in compensation income upon exercise. So let's focus on those ISOs. What does it take? ISO's requirements include a limit as to how much can be awarded. Generally, the fair market value of the stock underlying the options cannot exceed $100,000 for any recipient in any calendar year. Important example here. You have a startup company. The stock is valued at $1. It can award 100,000 options to any and every employee. A smarter move would be to grant 400,000 options that vest at 25% a year. The key is that the $100,000 limitation is measured by the original value and, importantly, the vesting date. Second important rule the option term must be limited to 10 years. And associated with that is an option generally must be exercised within 3 months from separation from service. This is where it's important to read the underlying agreement. Though the 3 months is set by statute, the decision is a company one to decide whether at the point of expiration, whether those options just disappear or they become non-qualified options. We've seen plenty of companies that just have them lapse within the 3 months. But there are some companies and some compensation agreements that allow the company to turn them into non-qualified options at the 3 month mark. So assuming you've got the proper amount of options awarded, the proper amount of terms in the agreements limiting it to 10 years, and exercise within 3 months of separation from service, assuming all these things happen, you can get favorable tax consequences, but only if the shares purchased are held for 2 years from the date of grant and at least 1 year from the date of exercise. Again, that's 2 years from the date of grant and 1 year from the date of exercise. Otherwise, the sale of these shares will be considered a disqualifying disposition, leading to less favorable tax results. The taxing scheme for an ISO basically looks like this. The grant of an ISO is not subject to income taxation. Upon exercise of an ISO, the option spread, and that's the post-grant appreciation, at the time of exercise, is not subject to regular taxation. Again, an ISO spread at exercise is not included in regular taxation. However, the option spread is considered a tax preference when computing the alternative minimum tax, the AMT. If the above holding requirements are met, the gain is delayed until the shares are sold, and it is treated as long-term capital gain. And the gain for AMT purposes is reduced by the tax preference recognized at exercise. This adjustment often serves to free up AMT credits in the year of sale of shares. In the past, executives, especially those living in high tax states, often got no benefit from ISO treatment since they were already in the AMT from the get-go. However, in the current tax environment, a strategic exercise over time can result in no tax at exercise and long-term capital gain treatment upon disposition. Here's an example. The startup company awarded your client 100,000 options at $1 a share back in 2016. Your client is in the top marginal tax rate. Your client vested in those shares back in 2017 when the company was valued at $2 a share and sold the shares in 2019 after the company had its IPO at $11 a share. So again, back in 2016, the grants were awarded at $1. In the period of exercise back in 17, they were worth $2. And then when they were sold, they were worth $11. So the way the rules work, there was no tax ramifications at grant. The $100,000 of spread at exercise wasn't included in regular tax, but it was a tax preference for AMT. In this case, let's assume that the preference was not enough to generate the AMT tax. the $1 million of profit on the sale, the long-term capital gain, results in this case a 23.8% tax, or $238,000 of federal capital gains tax and net investment income tax. So the $1 million is the difference between the $11 that the shares were sold for and the $1 that they were purchased for. If instead the client didn't meet the holding period, 2 years from grant, the 1 year holding of the shares, she exercised the option and sold the shares, in this case, simultaneously. She still has the same $1 million of profit. However, in this case, it is treated as compensation and taxed at 37.9%, or $379,000. So as an ISO, the tax was worth $238,000. And if she did not meet all the requirements, didn't meet the holding periods, the tax in this case would have been $379,000. Planning reduced the bill by nearly 40%. That's a 40% savings, taking it from 37.9% to 23.8%. So when do you exercise an ISO? Well, there's a lot of judgment here, and there are some cold, hard tax rules. Let's blend them both. So ideally, you want to exercise an ISO at least a year before your client intends to sell the shares so that they can meet the holding requirements. Exercise, probably want to do it in tranches so you don't trigger the AMT. And generally, you don't want to exercise them too early because the net borrowing costs and the risk of having the capital invested in the stock are pretty high. However, you should consider, in the case of a dividend-bearing stock, how much that dividend will overcome the borrowing costs and the risk of having your capital invested in the stock. Some thoughts. In the case of a traditional public company, and let's say it has an annual growth rate of 7%, so that the share price generally grows and moves in about a 7% range, the stock value will hypothetically double every 10 years. Since markets and careers don't move in a straight line, one general rule of thumb to consider is maybe exercising options at the earlier of the doubling of the share price and at least 3 years prior to expiration. You want to give your client a little runway, whether it's the markets or the company itself showing a decline. Once you get within a close range of the options disappearing, you want to really start concentrating on those exercises. The volatility of the underlying stock, general economic forecasts, and very importantly, the executive's employment also play significant roles in determining timing. So, veering away from a traditional public company, let's talk about an early stage company where initial valuations tend to be very low and move sharply during capital raises and other monetizing events. If the valuation is very low and the executive is very positive on the company's future, it may make sense for the executive to exercise ISOs as they vest. Effective ISO strategies often involve layering exercises over several years to minimize the AMT. Exercising ISOs in tandem with non-qualified options or in a year that restricted stock also vests may serve as a way to reduce the potential impact of the AMT. If your client is in or potentially in the AMT, I strongly recommend that the executive exercise early in the calendar year. This would allow the most view of the stock price so that the executive could make a disqualifying disposition. In order to have an effective disqualifying disposition to get rid of the AMT preference, it needs to take place in the same calendar year. So in the case of a market drop, this is critical. Both in the tech bubble and in 2008, we witnessed many executives owing more in AMT taxes than the stock was actually worth because they didn't dispose in the same calendar year as the ISO option exercise. Let's talk about financing ISO exercises. If an executive owns a big chunk of company stock but has a juicy ISO grant ripening, it may make sense to swap some of the shares already owned by the executive to finance the purchase of option shares, if allowable by the underlying plan and option agreements. We generally avoid taking advantage of cashless exercise of an ISO, since that would be treated as a disqualifying disposition for the portion of the stock retained by the company for the purchase price. So again, our preference is to use existing company stock to make a tax-free exchange to exercise the ISO option. You always could use cash, but we do not recommend taking a cashless exercise because that would consider a partial disposition and disqualify those shares from ISO treatment. As an advisor, it is crucial for you to know and educate your client about their plans. In the case of an ISO option, the right, as we said earlier, must be exercised within 3 months of leaving the company. Some plans provide ISOs become NQs with a longer exercise period. However, more commonly, the ISO just disappears after the 3 months. For those of you interested in more comprehensive material on this area of planning, our book, Financial Planning for Executives and Entrepreneurs, offers guidance to help CPAs understand and communicate employment contracts, compensation plans, and how changes to clients' employment may affect what has already been awarded and dramatically shortens the period of action. How to measure the extent of concentration of ownership, including options, direct stock, restricted stock, and other equity-based incentives. The leverage associated with employee stock options and how stock price movements can dramatically affect outcomes. The book also helps explain the company regulatory and tax rules and how they can impact purchase as well as sell decisions. Discuss actions to consider that should reduce potential taxes, and one of the most critical steps that must take place within 30 days of receiving an award. We also discuss the steps a client may wish to consider to mitigate risk while still participating in future upside. Our book also offers insight on helping CPAs create a tax-smart, comprehensive financial plan, including estate and philanthropic planning, to help their executives and entrepreneurial clients. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Nadine Lee of the Colony Group. If you've enjoyed the podcast, I encourage you to visit the PFP section website. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Again, thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit AICPA.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.